Welcome to the Core Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Rawls. On this podcast, you'll hear the stories and experiences of entrepreneurs and leaders in the outdoor industry. In these conversations, we'll discuss insights and actionable strategies to give you knowledge and inspiration to navigate your journey of entrepreneurship in the outdoor industry. This podcast is brought to you by CORE, the Kootenai Outdoor Recreation Enterprise. CORE is a nonprofit organization based in the Kootenai region of British Columbia. CORE's mission is to support the growing network of gear and apparel makers, designers, and entrepreneurs within the Kootenais. Today's conversation is with Louis-Julien Waugh, the founder and president of Mountain Exposure. Mountain Exposure is a sales agency for the cycling and outdoor industries in Western Canada. Some of the brands that they represent are Osprey, Smartwool, Icebreaker, Outdoor Research, Seven Mesh, Salsa, and Surly Bikes. Along with being a sales agency for these top-tier brands, Mountain Exposure is also a distributor in the cycling industry. They are the exclusive distributor of Ibis Bikes in Canada. In this conversation, we discuss the role that independent sales reps play in the outdoor and cycling markets, the mistakes that smaller brands can make when selling at retail, and we spend the second half of this conversation talking about relational selling, which I think is super applicable to any role where selling is involved. Louis has built a successful business in sales through building strong relationships. He's a close personal friend of mine, and I've learned a lot from him throughout my career. I'm glad to be able to share this conversation with you. So please enjoy my conversation with Louis-Julien Waugh. All right, Louis, here we are. Thanks so much for joining me today. First of all, I just wanted to find out, like, how in the world did a guy from Quebec end up in Camor and become a sales rep in the climbing industry?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Christian. That's a long and short story, if you like. I moved into Canmore in 1996 to be a climbing guide. I was in my early 20s, and that was like sort of my life dream and job that I wanted to do. And that's sort of how I ended up in Canmore. And how I became a sales rep is I did the climbing guide thing for about 4 or 5 years. And then at the end of this is like my career as a guide was going great, but it wasn't really much of a future for me there as in financially. So I decided I needed to pivot to do something else. So I'd taken a job at a climbing gym and sort of started training, got better at climbing because I wasn't guiding as much. And eventually I got myself some sponsor and I was kind of good, but not that good. And I was like, I'd do some ice climbing competition. I would finish like top 20, not top 3, but good enough to have great contact in the industry. And I decided at some point, I had worked retail in the past in Quebec and a little bit in Canmore. And I took my relationship with my sponsor and turned it into like the traditional like sort of sales rep gig.
What were the early days? Like, you don't have to name brands, but like, what were those early days of like putting food on the table as a sales rep in the outdoor industry?
Yeah, I don't know if there was a lot of food to go around, but but it's, essentially, like, I mean, I just kind of mentioned that expression, but the traditional sales rep gig. It was me, my cell phone, a heavy Dell laptop, and then a small car, and then I would just like sort of cruise around and then just go store to store and sell the brands that I had. And most of those brands were brands that were my sponsor at the time when I was a climber. So like it was Simon Chamonix, actually, who doesn't exist anymore. A Tree-Up climbing shoe doesn't exist anymore. Edelweiss rope. And then Flash Climbing from Calgary was still like a super relevant brand today. So that was, I think that was the first little assortment that I had when I started.
Cool. And your agency today, I should mention, is called Mountain Exposure. It's based, you have offices in Calgary and in Vancouver.
It is
significantly larger than the days of you and our old beater pickup truck. There's a lot that's happened between then and now. Is there like an inflection point in the sense of like for your career as essentially as the brands? Was there like a turning point where like you started working with a certain brand or some door opened for you that really changed the way you thought or the trajectory that your sales agency was able to go?
Yeah, like after the, like, I think the first year I made minus $8,000 or something. but I could see that this was going somewhere as a rep. And then in year two, like the retailers are like, okay, this guy's going to be around for a while. He's not giving up. So let's like swing him some good leads for better brands so we can work with him. And then the retailers sort of through our relationship started helping me getting better brands so that I could keep working with them. And then once I started getting a few better brands, I think the first one was Deuter at the time, which was a great lead. And then I started working with Outdoor Research at the same time. And that's when it really started. It's like I could see like there was like a true future for me there as a rep. But also I was starting to think, oh, maybe there's a little bit more. And then I think year five or so is when I was like, or four was like, okay, there's a definite path forward where we could add value if I had somebody to help me. And then I started to go from the rep model to the agency model so that few people could be added so that we could add value to our retailer and to the brands that we were representing at the time.
Right. So just for clarification, like the rep model is like one guy, laptop, hitting the road, going door to door, just selling stuff to retailers. And the agency model is I'm going to replicate what I'm doing by hiring people to go, you know, do my job at scale. So you can kind of replicate yourself and sell to more people, sell more things to more people.
Yeah, I think adding scale, also the ability to add value, because when you one person, you can be everywhere at once, right? By having multiple people, you can serve people better and hopefully like sort of grow the business that way and offer higher value service as well, like from a service or clinicking point of view where we teach people in store how to sell product or be able to be at multiple places at one time, like events and whatnot.
Right. So maybe this is a good point to step back just a little bit and kind of explain to those who maybe don't know exactly how the outdoor industry works or the cycling industry works with sales reps and sales agencies. So you have your brands and you've got like distributors, reps, and then you've got the retailers. Like where does the sales agency, the rep fit into that relationship and what do they do?
The agency's sort of job is to create the link in between retailer and brand or brand to retailer. We're really that bridge that helps everybody connect together. Our job is obviously to sell product to retailer, but it's also like to help retailers sell product as well. So we're kind of like, we're truly in the middle. Like there's no advantage for us to advocate more for one than the other. We have to add value to both.
Right.
And I'm sure. The advantage for a brand is sorry, Christian. The advantage for a brand to use us is that we have the contact in a given territory, essentially.
Right. Like you've got the relationships with the retailers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Over the course of your career, I mean, you're 20 years, sales rep for around 20 years?
Yeah, it's nice you remind me of that. But yes, 22 years now.
22 years. So you're a professional for sure, an expert. You put in your 10,000 hours times 10. A lot's changed in the model of like what entails a sales rep's job in the sense of like clinicking. So you're going into retail stores and teaching the staff how to sell. You're putting on events. You're actually doing the sell in. So you're doing the preseason mm-hmm. bookings. I mean, it's pretty massive, like all the things that a sales agency or effective sales agency could and should be doing. Like thinking about it in the terms of, because a lot of our audience is from smaller brands, startup brands or early mm-hmm. stage brands. What is it that that a sales rep can offer or help out with in those early stage brands? Because it's one thing to be the Outdoor Research or the Smart Wool of the World brands you represent now. It's another mm-hmm. thing to be a smaller brand trying to open the door. Like how can sales reps help smaller brands in that situation?
Yeah, so I think we can definitely help break the ice with new retailer, use our relationship to bring credibility to those brands. For example, Bit Mountain Exposure, another of the great agency there in the West, like Onward Up or whatever, like, if you're with one of us, you're probably pretty legit as a brand because it's sort of a filter, if you like, to have been chosen by one of the main agencies. So that means that the retailer will probably trust that there's something there. So you can, as a small brand, you can piggyback on the agency that way. And there's also the fact that the agency model essentially is we pull all the resources together from all our brands to make it possible to travel to those small town of those different area. So you also this sort of scalability. So you're with us, you get the same exposure as a bigger brand in a lot of ways, even though you're small, because you're in the bag and you travel with us everywhere. So that's also a big part of it, which would be essentially nearly impossible for a small brand to do on their own because it would just be cost prohibitive, right?
Right. Like you get with a sales agent or with a really good sales rep, you get entrance into the right meetings and you get into the hands of the right buyers at the right retail level.
Exactly.
It's like hard. I mean,
any given day, there's probably five of us on the road somewhere in Western Canada right now, right? It's hard to replicate as a single brand, single person pushing it on your own type thing.
In my experience from the brand side, you know, being a smaller brand, the dream is to get into the hands of a larger agency, which because they bring so much, all the things you just spoke about, there's a lot of advantage to that. Sometimes it doesn't work for smaller brands. It's hard for somebody to pioneer the territory for a small brand. Sometimes the juice isn't worth the squeeze for the agency. So we have to start out, smaller brands have to start out in these relationships with, you know, finding your peers, finding a sales rep who's like at that same level that you are, right? So you're an early stage rep, maybe you kind of find some early stage brands to go in the bag and also some of those, the bigger ones to help pay the bills. But from your experience, because you had smaller brands that you've repped in the past, what is it that helps smaller brands gain the attention of reps? And then what is it that they do that makes the rep's job easier to sell the smaller brand?
Yeah, like, not to sound cliche, but like they need to remove friction essentially. Right, they need to make it easy to do business with them. Sometimes people say squeaky wheel and get the grease, but it's not just that. But like making it easy for us, if you have all your sales material, all your marketing material ready, if you have like an order form or a B2B, like whichever scale you're at, make that easy. That you can take an order on the phone. That you're not like, oh, so special, it needs to come this way with this information and that. Just make it easy for the sales reps so that he can, essentially they want, even though, again, cliche, but you want to close deals. If you can close deal quickly and then move on to the next one, then for a rep, this is amazing, right? Like they know it's like they're not wasting time on the small stuff. Salespeople are not great at the detail work. They're there to close deal and they love the action. So if you can help them do this, then you'll get more attention. It's extremely hard being a sales rep. You hear no all day. So when somebody's helped you get through it and then get to a yes a little quicker, it makes a massive difference in being motivated to work for that brand. It's not just dollars and cents, obviously, often.
You make a good point. Then that's definitely something I want to come back to in a second. The idea of like you hear no all day, because that's one thing I want to talk about with you is just sales in general and how you think about sales. That hearing the no all day is something that I continue to have to remind myself. It's like, yeah, it's just part of the job. Like no happens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, no happens more frequently than yes for the startup brands as you get going.
I often tell our team, just before you ask your question, but I often tell our team is like, kind of want to try to get to know as fast as we can, even though that's a little counterintuitive from the vacuum salesman or whatever. Because if you get to know, you can move on to a better qualified lead, somebody that needs what you have, that's going to support their business better, and then you can move in that direction. So getting to know is also a positive thing at times.
Right. Instead of being led on and like, oh yeah, maybe next month or let's just see what happens here.
Exactly.
Just give me a hard and fast. Yeah, it's good.
Absolutely.
A lot of these startup brands and you know, you are founder led for a long time, right? You just, as you scale, like the guy or the woman who started the business is the CEO and at the helm for a long time. You've worked with some of those brands. I mean, you know, Icebreaker, you worked with Icebreaker from the early days growing up. I mean, it was still obviously a large international brand by the time it came to Canada, but you were with them in those early days and worked with the founder, Jeremy Moon. I'm curious, it doesn't have to be that example, but like, are there things that you've seen founders of brands do that have really helped the brand itself? You know, like what are they doing that is adding value for the brand? And I guess the reverse is true, is like, what do they need to not do? You know, how do they need to get out of the way sometimes to allow the sales agency to do their job or the marketing department to do their job? You know what I mean?
I think the best founders I work with they're really self-aware. They really know what they're good at. They know what they're not good at. Like Jeremy Moon's a great example. Jeremy is amazing. We could bring him to any meeting and he would be like a deal enabler. He'd make it happen. He'd make truthful promise and he'd make it happen. He was there with his notebook and taking note and making it happen. He was really good that way. You look at Mike Folkenauer from Osprey. Kind of an introvert dude, super good at design, just never really got mixed in with us in sales. He just does this thing that he's really good at, and he's hired amazing sales manager to work with us and do that same thing I was saying Jeremy is good at. And I think founder need to find their sort of unique ability and stick to that, to make sure they don't get in the way with the other stuff.
What do you think the mindset for like startup brands should be as they approach selling? So kind of getting into the more of the idea of how we sell and how we represent our products in the market. Like what do you think? Like self-awareness is one of those things. Like, what do you think the things are that you need to be thinking about as a founder as you approach the market?
Yeah, I think it's this whole idea of like being a little too in love with your own product sometime. And then like step back and then look at it from the point of view of the retailer and then really like sort of really like, okay, what is the retailer seeing here? What is it fixing for them? What is it helping them with? What does that look and feel like for them? And then the same thing with the consumer, obviously. But there's often a little bit of a gap there. Product is created for consumer, but it needs to work for the retailer as well, so it's scalable for everyone, right? It needs to be a win-win. And that's very important. And with the advent of D2C business, now direct consumer, and like Indigo startup type stuff, sometimes there's a lot that's no longer working for the wholesaler there. That can be a bit challenging to reconcile all these things in the process of trying to launch at wholesale.
Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, do you mean in the sense of like people, brands are kind of launching as a direct-to-consumer brand, then they're like, well, let's do wholesale too. And then they try to bring that mindset to wholesale and it falls flat. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it can fall apart from like not having the right margin structure, the wrong retail price, no packaging, not being set up to ship in a box of 12, or like all these little things that are just not have been thought about, because you're like, well, I'm just going to sell this hat, for example, you guys in an envelope and ship it to people and that's perfect. And then all of a sudden you go to retail, you need maybe point of sale or signage or marketing activation. And then all of a sudden it's not quite
button UPC stickers.
UPC sticker, yeah, exactly. Stickering, like great example of things. Or now, like you know, a bigger retailer and want the RFID sticker, and it's like all these things, or EDI compliant, all those other things that are, can be. You don't need to be there as a small brand, but like they're part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a conversation the other day with James Friedrich from MEC Mutual, friend of ours, and we were talking about how it's easy for us to be thinking as the founder or as the product developer is like, okay, I'm just thinking about the value that I'm bringing to the end consumer and like all the features and benefits and how amazing this product is. Then you show up to sell to a buyer. So a retail buyer. So the person who's going to be actually placing it on the retail floor, buying it from you to then sell it to the consumer. And it's a whole nother set of value propositions that we have to be prepared to make for them. Because now it's not just, what are we selling to the consumer? It's like, what value are we actually bringing to this retailer? You've seen lots of successful brands go at it well at the retail level. What are those things that make a brand successful at the retail level in the sense of creating the value for not only for the end consumer, like the product's amazing, but what is it that they do, you know, essentially to help the seller sell through, right? So it's one thing to sell in and be like, oh, this product's so amazing. And then it just sits on the floor and doesn't sell. Like, what do brands do that make it easy to sell through?
There's a lot of very simple thing, like shipping on time for that season. You know, like we see this all the time from brand. They ship the fall season in October and we have already had our first cold snap. And then we've missed like one third of the sales season. Really look at the year in terms of each week is a certain percentage of the year, right? And then if like you need to get through those steps. So if you're not there early enough, you're not going to sell 100% of your product in the given like 26 weeks or whatever. So that's super important. I'd say like, again, like people think about marketing and activation, brand awareness. A lot of small brands, I think, kind of figured this out now with social media and it's a lot easier than it used to be. But the removing that business friction, making sure that like, all the information is on a form so that the retailer can upload it on their website, that they can put it in their point of sale very easily, and then they can manage all the information. All those little things gives you a longer window to sell the product in store, which in return gets the staff more used to it, and everybody is in the flow of selling it. And by the time you get to the critical window, like we were talking about fall, by the time you get 3 weeks before Christmas, everybody has seen the product for a couple of months in the store. They're ready to sell it. People want it. They know how to advise them on it, and they can complete the transaction easier.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of one thing that I learned from you a long time ago. And not to keep going back to icebreaker, it's just this is, they did a really, I think they did a really good job.
Amazing. Yeah.
They did a really good job of like hitting the retail market. And I think your agency did a wonderful job in representing them and making this happen, but they came through really strong on the retail floor. And like, you're like every store that you went into that was an icebreaker dealer, like the staff was actually wearing the product and they did a really good job of like getting it on or in the hands of the floor staff. And I think that there is missed opportunities sometimes because we neglect to remember that we have to really be focused as a brand. We have to be focusing on the sell through. It's like, oh, we got the sale, that we set the order out. That's awesome. But there's a whole lot that has to happen after that to actually make it work so that we can get the reorder the next season.
You know, staffization, seeding, like giving product to people, it's probably the most important. No sales staff wants to be on the floor not knowing what they're talking about. So they're going to turn to stuff they're comfortable with to talk about with the consumer, right? Same thing. Like if they haven't tried it out, like back then, merino wool was such a new category. People heard wool, they were getting itchy. They didn't want to touch it. You know, we had to get it on the back of people so they understood how it works, how amazing it was. And then it was easy for them to share the experience because selling by storytelling is probably like one of the easiest thing to do, right? Like you say, oh, I was skiing with this at minus 20 the other day and I wasn't cool on the way down and I wasn't cool on the chair when I wasn't doing anything. It's amazing. Like small story, but like really powerful, right? Everybody kind of knows in Western Canada what it's like to be sitting on a chairlift at minus 20. Like it creates that really vivid picture for people. And I think that's the next layer of this. Like, you know, you get people product, but then you got to be there to teach them how to use it, give them an experience with the product then so then they can pass on that experience. Like I think as a species, we kind of communicate through storytelling and then we kind of got to make sure people have a story to share.
Right. That's a really good point about how you can come prepared to sell at retail is come with a story. Like how does your product fit into the story of your consumer and kind of making your end consumer the hero of the story is a good way to think about it.
My strongest point to staff and clinic is always to be like, if you are the enabler of this person to have this amazing weekend, you're that person for them. They're going to come back and see you because you sold them like a warm jacket or like so-and-so's hands are always cold and you got them the perfect gloves. Like you enable them to live the dream, if you like. And that is so powerful. That consumer will come back. And so much at retail now, like we've all had the experience where like you can run through a store and nobody will say anything to you. Like it's just mind-boggling the amount of opportunity that are lost that way.
Yeah, right. Like the when you go into a retail store with well-trained staff, you actually kind of want to hang out for a little while. Because
absolutely, yeah.
And if the opposite's true, if it's an untrained staff, you're like, let's go.
Yeah. Or you grab the thing, the one thing, and you may have needed 20 other things for your trip, but you just grab the one thing that was on your list and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what those interactions can do and how we educate from a brand side, how we can educate floor staff to know our story, to know the brand story, to know the product story, to know the features and benefits. And it doesn't have to be exhaustive. It doesn't have to be a full slide deck. I mean, the shorter, the sweeter, I think, and how we can prepare people to sell. But it is definitely something that is easy to forget about and all the things we're thinking about when trying to sell at a wholesale level.
You just need to like make sure that the top 10% information stick with the staff, right? The brand story, the product story, key feature and benefit, the problem that it solves, that's it. That's all you need to get them. But if you can get on top of this, they can layer their own experience with the product, then you're really winning.
Yeah. And I think this is important. I mean, this is one thing, you know, in the great debate of which way do we go, direct to consumer or business to business, you know, is wholesale the right way? Is direct to consumer both the right way? And I mean, I think there's cases to be made that a good blend of both is necessary, but there is no escaping the fact that at brick and mortar retail level is the place where you can actually have the easiest conversions through story. And we're selling high ticket items for most of the products that your agency sells, they're expensive. They are not, afterthoughts or impulsive purchases. And so we really rely on having those connections with the retail staff to then have the connection with the consumer to explain what is the benefit of this $400, $500, $600 item versus you know, something that's half the price. And to be able to actually share that story with people is invaluable if you want to be able to succeed at it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of small brand or generally like underestimate the power of wholesalers. Like a lot of them are amazing. They have they're really competent. They all come from a passion driven sort of start. They have great retail location. They specialize, so there's a level of curation there that if you product make it in there, it means that the people that are coming through the door are relevant to that product. Then you get eyeball you're not supposed to get, because if they came in to buy a canoe and then they see your stove, then oops, happy accident, right? Like then maybe they get to be exposed to your product. And at any given time, there's like, I don't know, 200 door open in Western Canada that sell outdoor product with, that's 10 people in each, right? That's 2,000 people looking at product. Like that's hard to do on a website, to have 2,000 people 8 hours a day looking at product, like, you know, so I think it's sometimes we forget this, how much scale there is at wholesale retail.
And I think especially for small brands, when you can sell to independent retailers, they feel like they're doing business with a peer, as opposed to
a
larger, you know, there's a ton of publicly traded companies in the outdoor industry, in the bike industry, and there's advantages to those, and there's advantages to, you know, multi-store regional or national chains as well. But on the independent retail level, it's amazing how much I've noticed that the owners and buyers of those stores love to do business with the smaller brands, because it feels like a peer. It feels like they're doing business with somebody just like them.
Yeah. I mean, my whole career has been built on brands that are privately owned, essentially. There's only a few of our brands that are not even right now. And it's always been really awesome to be able, even like when brands are like 100 million, that you can still phone up the owner and say, what are you doing? What's going on here? Oh, this is your point of view. Like, it's amazing, like, you know, to be able to have the access to these great thinker. I think as entrepreneur, like being a retailer or a brand owner, it is like a passion that we share for solving problems, growing businesses and stuff. And it's really great to interact with each other.
One thing that I've learned a lot from you over the years, and you know, I guess to be fully candid, Louis and I have, you and I talk once a month at least about all sorts of things. And I've learned a lot from you over the years. And one of the main things that I keep coming back to is, I was explaining this to someone yesterday. You call it relational selling, and I know that's not your term, but it's the idea of, like, you've taught me how to come into these meetings with potential buyers and really come from a place of curiosity and asking questions about what it is that they're looking for, what it is they need, before I ever start talking about my product or what I hope to bring to the equation. And to me, that's been a real change for me. That was like a big mind shift for me. It's like, oh, right, I need to come in curious about what they're into and what they're looking for and what their hopes, needs, wants, and desires are, so that I can then see if we're a good fit. What is it that you think about when you're training somebody new at Mountain Exposure and they're coming into the selling and you're getting them warmed up to the system of like, hey, this is how we do things here, which I love about you and how you run your business, is you are very specific about how you like to do things and the way you like to go about selling the brands that you carry. What is it like? Talk to us about relational selling and where does that come in on the day to day?
Yeah. So opposite is transactional, right? I just go and pitch you and then you say yes or no, buy some shit, and then I leave. It's kind of like that's transactional selling, and that works. And we've all, like, last night there was somebody at my house trying to sell me some fundraiser thing, you know, and that's like very transactional kind of deal.
Like when people say, oh, I don't want to sell, or I'm afraid of selling, or I don't like to sell, I think transactional selling is actually what they have in mind. Like, that's what comes to our mind, is like that car salesman, that door-to-door salesman transaction.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the sort of the cliche of sales, if you like. And then do we do transactional selling? Yeah, 100%. Like, that happens. And sometimes that's the win for everyone. It's like, no, I just need this. Can you make this happen? Bye. Moving on. For sure it happens. So one thing that's also different than other sales job with an agency is that our brand and our retailer hopefully they're with us forever, right? That's the goal. So it's really important to have a great relationship with our retailer and then support them in the best way we can. If I had to sum up what relationship selling is about, it's about adding value. And if adding value to your store today is to try to help you find a staff, that's maybe that, like, you need a salesperson right now, or you need a new shipper receiver, and I know one. And that's adding value. And then I think that is how we sometimes come out of left field. It's like, oh, what's the real problem you're having? Like, you can't receive my stuff. It's all stuck in the back. That's why it's not selling. Let me sell you more. That's not going to do anything for you or for me. The win-win here is if we can find you somebody to help you. Can one of us come and help you for a day? Or do we know about somebody that's awesome in another store that wants to move to your city or whatever it is, right? This is with kind of like small example of what that shift is in your mind, right? And then for us, it's like, I always tell the team, if you're a new member to our team, you're not allowed to sell anything to anyone if you haven't met them at least 3 times in person.
Hold on, go back and say that one more time.
So if you're a new member to our team and you start going to visit retailer and you're a salesperson, you should not be trying to sell them anything actively unless you've met them 3 times in person. Well, I don't think you earn anybody's trust if you just like did a quick drive-by and say, hey, I'm so-and-so and I sell stuff. You know, if you've met them 3 times, they know you're for real and you're going to be around for a little longer. And I think that's a great way to go about it. And it's not that hard. Like, you go visit them once, you see them at the trade show, you go visit them for clinic, bang, you're into the next season. It's not like it's a crazy ask, but that means you've gone through the process of the season. You're going to be there to support them, and then you'll be with them for a long time. And then you mentioned the whole curiosity thing, you know, asking questions and trying to find these things that are the challenge in their store. So if there's, maybe you have a solution for them, maybe you've seen things elsewhere. There's a great book, you're going to love the title too. It's called Getting Naked, and it's like a consulting approach to selling, right? With true vulnerability. So you ask dumb questions sometimes, and people will laugh. And it's like, well, I don't know how this works, you know? But it's okay, because through these asking those questions and being vulnerable, you're building trust. You also expanding the horizon or your understanding of the store. And then eventually you're like, oh, I can plug this hole for you. And then sometimes it's your product that plugs that hole. Or it's like, oh, this segment of my line is much better for you from what you're telling me than this segment over here that's too expensive, or you're looking to do more per square foot. Maybe I need to be in a more expensive area type thing. Does that make sense?
Totally. It reminds me of another book, To Sell as Human, is another one that I would,
yes, absolutely.
I would throw in there to kind of demystify the idea of, you know, to help you shift from transactional to relational selling.
Mm-hmm. The big undertaking requires a level of vulnerability. It requires a level of like venturing into the unknown with someone. You also stepping away from the goal that's at hand when you do this. So that's why it's hard to do. But if you know your stuff, you'll get back to where you need to get back with people.
And it's playing on patience, right? That's the hard part, you know, especially from a sales-driven perspective or a revenue-driven perspective. It's hard to sometimes have patience for the process, mm-hmm. and to be thinking about. But I always think, I've been thinking a lot of this lately, is the idea of compounding interest in time. So, like, you know, we have effort and we add time to it. But if you just, you know, keep putting in the effort and let the time play out for you, you know, the results will come. We just can't rush. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't rush those relationships or the process, because yeah, we just got to put in the time to really make it work. Hand in hand in that is like the idea of lifetime value of customers. You hear LTV a lot in e-commerce conversations, and people are always thinking about I need to calculate the LTV of my customers.
I don't know what the LTV is.
Lifetime value. So how much?
Oh, lifetime value.
Yes. Sorry. Lifetime value. Awesome. So how much somebody is? Well, I hate to say this, but how much somebody is worth to your business over their lifetime? The numbers are, you know, can be small in direct to consumer, or, you know, if you're selling deodorant, it can be relatively large lifetime value over the course of years. I think it's something that doesn't get looked at enough from the wholesale perspective, is the lifetime value of your customers. And I did the exercise a few months ago and looked at the lifetime value of my longest running retailers, and it's shocking. It totally changed my perspective. I mean, I knew oh, I've been working with them for a long time and they're important customers for me. And then I actually saw the number of what the transactions we've done together over time. It's shocking. I was amazed. Yeah, and right? Not that it necessarily changes the way that I interact with that person, but it reframes the value or the position of that relationship and like, oh, wow, you put that relationship in, you just add time to it. And oh my gosh, it is worth a whole lot of money to your business.
Yeah, incredible. And like 10,000 a year for 10 years from one retailer is still 100K, right? It's not something you want to throw away. It doesn't look big in the moment, but it's quite valuable for a small business.
Yeah. And you keep stacking those up and adding to them. And you know, that's how you build a very successful business over time, is those long-term relationships. If you're thinking about going into a sales meeting for the first time, so you're approaching a new retailer and you're going to try to pitch so you've got this new product that you want to sell to them. And maybe let's just say you've met this retailer before, but it's a new product category. It's a new thing. You're now just representing this new brand or this new product. Like, walk me through how you would go about going into that meeting for the first time. Cause this is actually an exercise you did with me years ago for my brand. Just to help me think about how I need to go into these, because I'm a bit of a bumbler when it comes to sales. And so I want to do the exercise here is like, can we hypothetically come up with like, how would you go into selling somebody a new product for the first time? Like, what are you thinking about as far as that curiosity and introing this product for the first time?
Yeah, like, so first you need to kind of know product in and out. You need to understand like what the value proposition is, what your pricing is, all those things, logistic. Like, I have that hopefully buttoned down. That sounds very simple. Like, half the time we show up, we have half of that. And it's just a function of like the partner we're working with, where we are in time, whatever, but that is part of it. So you also have to be ready for a little bit of unknown. So they're winging it. And I would say biggest challenge for sales rep is we get really good at winging it. Because you kind of forced to, we're at the end of the line. So if the stuff wasn't delivered to us, we need to sort of make up a part of it to have a decent presentation to do. So that's just kind of one part of it. Then I'll like, because the whole qualifying the customer, right? I'll look at my portfolio. I was like, okay, who can sell X and Y? And then I would start with those people. So I already like kind of assume it's like, oh, they're really good. Like if we're talking about tents, for example, and it's like, oh, this guy sells a lot of tents. That may be a good idea, but maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe they have all the best tents. This guy doesn't sell as much tent, but he only has two of the good brand. He doesn't have all three of the good brand. Maybe I can slide mine as their top brand or their second tier brand. So kind of finding which space I'm taking for this person and then coming, like, this is assuming, like, for us, for example, most of our retailer we work with for over 10 years. So they kind of know, we know their business and we're like, hey, kind of know what's going on here. Does this make sense? I was thinking about you when I saw this. And then go from that perspective. Where does it fit in their context, essentially?
Right.
And then pitch from that point of view.
And so
I'm curious to know what I said to you in the past.
Yeah. I think I've just embodied it now. It's just, I can't say what the specifics were that you told me, but I've just embodied it now. That's why I owe my success to you, actually. Yeah. No, it was about going into meetings, or just, you know, a presentation of the line with somebody and starting first with questions. I was going from, well, number one, I don't love sales. So I've got that in my mind. I've got this transactional cliche running in my mind. Like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't, you know. You help me reframe thinking about, well, just go into it asking them questions about what is it that they are looking for. Like, it may not be about our product, just in general. Like, just asking questions like, how's your business? What's working well in your business right now? What isn't working? What are the brands that you couldn't buy enough of right now? Oh, that tells me something about where you're at and where your business is at and all those things. So I feel like, you know, I just came back from, you know, a couple of weeks of trade shows, and I find that this happens a lot too, is like, you know, if I have a meeting with somebody for 30 minutes, I spend 15 minutes of it talking, asking them questions about their business and asking questions about other brands and asking questions about their struggles or the retailer, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then in the next 15 minutes, we're actually going to talk about our product. What I've realized is that now I have all of this information that they've willingly given me that I can either say, yeah, I want to show you this product, or I want to show you these products because I think it's going to do well because of this thing that you just showed me. Or let's skip over this section of my products because I know that this isn't working. This is a category this is a price point that's not working well for you. And so then I'm way more valuable to them because I'm not going to waste their time. They're going to trust me more because I'm literally saying, hey, you know what? I don't think this is right for you because I know this about you right now. And I find that is like a way easier way to sell to people because I'm just informed now.
So a couple of things that came to mind. So like first phase of our meeting is always sort of a clear the air, right? Is there anything shitty that happened? Is there anything that's not working? Did we screw up something? Did the brand screw up something? Are you unhappy about something? Then that doesn't come and get you later on, right? When you're in the meeting and say, oh, we're going to ship you this in August. You guys are going to ship on time. And it's like, oh, but no, I'm like set back again. So you clear the air, see what's going on, ask more questions. Like you said, like discover more if it's relevant, depending if you know the retailer. Now you can use this information and weave it into your sales presentation. Your sales presentation, in my opinion, shouldn't be a pitch. Like, you know, like you have a pitch deck and you just run through the thing hard, you know, like, and I've seen this a million times, like you're running to this pitch deck and there's 2/3 of it that's not relevant. So you're wasting everyone's time. If you have a pitch deck or a presentation, you just skip to the slide, you know it, and you skip to where you need to be. If you're in a catalog, you're just like, I need to show you this. We need to go here on the wall. We need to look at that because that's relevant to you. Am I right? Like, did I get this right? Now, there's one thing that's really important, though. If you're going to be curious and ask questions and gather information, don't use it against them, right? The classic thing is I remember going to buying a car, and somewhere along the way, I filled a questionnaire. I didn't even really mindfully did it, but I said something in there that I like it when my windshield is not cracked or something. And then when I was in the back office, when they're trying to like sell you a little more, like they're like, well, you said this was important to you, so you should buy the glass warranty for $500 a year. And I was like, are you motherfuckers? Why? Like you just trapped me with my own information. And there's no like worse than this. Don't use the information against them, but use it to benefit them and add value. That should really be genuine thing that you're trying to do is to add value. And because essentially you're just trying to build trust. And then would allow you later to, if you don't have a lot of time, you're like, hey, I really need to see this. And I think it'll work. They'll trust you and they'll buy it, but don't abuse that.
Yeah. That's a good point. Thank you for pointing that out. Cause not to turn that information you gather back around onto them. I mean, that in your situation, that could have been a data point that the salesperson could have used, you know, to effectively sell you an upsell of the window thing, but they just could have done it in a totally different way.
Totally. Like if they just had gone about it a little softer, they would have got it. But the way they did it, it was like, oh no, you trapped me. I'm not doing this now.
Yeah.
I'm just going to buy it from the guy across the street. You know?
Transactional salespeople. We got to get rid of them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Step by step with people like you in the world.
But the difference is not big, right? Like it's almost the same thing, but just used differently. And that's where the subtleties are, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, in your situation, they were looking for data points to help them upsell essentially. Like, okay, what is this person's, you know, give us information, but then they just weaponized it as opposed to let's add, you know, they weaponized it for revenue as opposed to using it to add value, to have long lifetime value, you know, like let's just add, I may not get it now.
We're back there now. Yeah.
But yeah, let's get it later. You know, like I can use this information in this relationship. And at the end of the day, ask any sales rep or salesperson this question, and sales is relationships. That's all it is.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
And in small businesses, especially in the bike and outdoor industry, a lot of times the founders are like your Mike from Osprey is a great example. Product genius. We have a lot of product geniuses in the world and not necessarily great at sales or marketing. And that's fine. That's great. We need you to make the great products and design the great products. Just make sure that you get out of the way and find the right people to help you build those relationships and manage those for you, because that's what's going to bring you success, is finding the right people to build the sales up for you.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because you had sent me some question and I was like, you're saying, when should a small brand get sales rep? And one of my first things is like, well, if the owner is getting in nowhere selling, they should probably get a sales rep because that's not uncommon, right? You know, or like if they're running out of capacity and then they need help or whatnot. But I think small brands should do their own selling for as long as they can, because that's so much learning that can be done there. So not dismissing that, you know, like we're an important part of the chain, but I think a brand needs to get to a certain size where they can benefit from a sales agency, and the learning they can do in that part of the business is so key.
Yeah. And the information you can gather too. I mean, I think that's one thing that sales reps can do for you too, is just they can gather so much information for a brand. But the hard part is like, it's not often, it doesn't make its way all the way back up the chain of command. Right. And so when you're the founder or the owner and you're doing the sales, you get to hear it right there, you know, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So you get to hear that feedback, you know, and sometimes I think some people guard the feedback. And so I try to make a point of like, hey, everything's fair. You're not going to hurt my feelings about what you say about my product. Cause I think sometimes people will kind of put on the kid gloves cause they're afraid that they don't want to hurt your feelings. And you know, that happens. But if you're, you know, if you show and build a history of being able to receive feedback, you know, there's nothing more valuable than in getting it directly from your customers. I think Jack Welch, former CEO of GE said, don't let anybody get in the way of your customers. And I've always thought about that in relationship to sales reps. Cause you know, when I work with, I know I have sales reps for my brand. And I do think about this, like, oh, I've got this person in between me and my customers that, you know, that kind of bothers me sometimes. And what I've realized is like, when you have the right sales agency or rep working for your brand, like you want somebody between you and your customer, like they add a ton of value if they're doing it right. And this is the hard part, is finding the right ones and building up the relationship with that sales rep and providing them with all the stuff that they need to be able to do their job correctly, and then support them and get out of the way.
Yeah, I think the sales rep or the rep agency can provide a level of insulation in between retailer, consumer, and brand that sometimes is required to make things run a little smoother. And not get so personal at time when there's challenges and whatnot, you know. And it's also a key part of what we do, filtering the right information out both ways.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
Don't want to hear everything. Not everyone want to hear everything we hear all day, but really filtering the key information that will help people be successful.
Not only do you have a sales agency that works in the outdoor industry, you have a sales agency that also works in the bike industry. And as well, you are also the distributor for Ibis Bikes in all of Canada. So you have your hand in a lot of different pies and see a lot of different things in the market. And my question for you is, there's a lot of flux, it feels like, right now and shifting right now in the bike industry. And from your perspective and what you see and how you kind of, you like to look into the crystal ball of what's coming down in the future, what do you think the open gaps, open white spaces in the market for small startup brands, where can they fit? Like, what can we be thinking about as startup founders in the next couple of years to really either find spaces for new innovation in the market or new places for to add value for retailers? Like, what is it that you see? Are there any specifics you see for small startups?
It's a long, convoluted answer, I think, that one, but... Like there's definitely a few drivers that I see, but like innovation is really important. Fixing real problems is really important. People don't need more shit. There's starting to be like a lot, like every jacket has a zipper in the middle and two armholes and a head hole, right? Like eventually there's starting to be a lot of the same things out there. So actually building product, not just for the sake of building product, but actually that solves a real problem and that's useful. And maybe that has a longer lasting life and all these things. I think that's really important to people. Also, choosing the right sales channels, that seems to be very important right now. I think the independent retailer can do an amazing job at really bring a product to life, right? Because they can give it a bit of spotlight, but I think there's also great opportunity for the independent retailer to sell small brand because it makes them special. Sort of brings us back to if what's missing right now is like pretty much everything is available everywhere. Like if I want to buy this Hydro Flask cup, I can pretty much go online and find it. I can walk down the street and find another retailer that sells it and then buy it. It's no longer special like it used to be to have a specific brand. This is not how the market works anymore. And this is probably the toughest thing for an independent retailer is like having XYZ brand is no longer enough. They have to bring people into their store other ways, where it used to be that, well, you can, if you want the information and you want the brand, you need to come to my store. Those days are over. The information is available everywhere, and product is essentially at our fingertips now with the phone or whatever. We all know that stuff. So small brand can really help a retailer be special because they're not everywhere. Going to an independent retailer and showing them like something that solves real problem, that's really cool, exciting to talk about, all of a sudden you're really bringing that back for a small retailer. And I think that's what they're really craving right now.
That's good. That's perfect. Love it. That's a good place to end, Louis. Thanks so much. If people want to mount exposure, people can check out the portfolio of wonderful brands that you represent. mountainx.ca. And Louis, I really appreciate, again, dropping the knowledge. And yeah, I look forward to the next time we get to chat.
Yeah, love to. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you know someone who would enjoy this episode, please share it with them. If you enjoyed it, take 30 seconds to give us a review on your podcast player. Ratings and reviews go a long way in spreading the word about the show. It takes hours to create an episode and only 30 seconds to leave a review. We'd really appreciate it. To learn more about CORE, visit coreoutdoors.org. That's K-O-R-E outdoors.org. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.